In this episode, learn the three principles to reclaim value in the attention economy.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery, brought to you by Wirebuzz.
What is up? What is up? Look, it is time to start adjusting because there's a new world that we're all living in. And so few of the people out there have actually morphed into the present and where we are. So in this episode, you're going to discover the three principles for reclaiming your product's value in the attention economy. And can we just start off with a little bit of therapy session at the beginning, right here, right now, amongst friends? Would you be okay with that? All right. My name is Todd.
Hi, Todd.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, I have attention disorders. I'm a little embarrassed to share this in front of the group, but in fourth grade, I was diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactive disorder. You know, I've been working on it for years, and today you'd never know unless I tell you. I'm now, for many years, I was a non-disclosure guy, but then my career just took off, and after, you know, 20 years of success in digital marketing, I figured at this point I can be a disclosure guy, because people aren't going to use it against me. I hide it really well. I overcompensate. And for all my years of doing interviews and getting people in front on a camera or having them in the radio studio, but more specifically when I have them on camera, you know, you have to establish eye contact and not break that eye contact with the person that I've got on camera. You know, my attention and my focus has actually become a strength of mine. So why am I obsessed with attention? Well, because I'm a marketer and I want to make sure that I'm always providing the best results, not only for my clients, but for my own company. I want to make sure that I command attention as a professional speaker. And as a kid, I spent a lot of time with other students who couldn't hold their attention to a conversation. You know, the school basically threw all of us ADHD kids into the same room. It was like a blow-up bouncy house free-for-all for people who couldn't follow a full sentence. And what I discovered is in those rooms, when I'm making eye contact with ADHD kids, I see the eye contact, the mental breaks that the others have. And now fast-forwarding 30 years later, and everyone in our culture is displaying the same visual cues of attention disorders that I used to see each and every day just from the ADHD kids. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think I've got some freakish visual powers of being able to diagnose people, but I'm a marketer and I'm trying to study culture and technology. And you see, I think in the digital era, ADHD has become a learned, trained response from the constant interruptions that each and every one of us gets throughout our day, our smartwatches, cell phones, and computers. They've all created digital interruptions that we've allowed into our life. And every time your spouse, your sibling, your client, or your homie sends you a text, it breaks your mental thought process. And eventually, you just get too many forced mental breaks. And you know what happens? Your brain starts craving more breaks, like your brain craves a Snickers bar, right? The more you have, the more breaks you need. And your attention becomes the digital version of really a bad addiction. Look, in the UK Telegraph, I saw this very week that there was an interesting research study. Now, coming up in a few moments, we're going to talk with another researcher, actually a professor at the Harvard Business School, who's going to come on this podcast. And his research information was just spotlighted in Google Insights. Think with Google and the email they push out to smart marketers that are hungry to learn. And boy, not only did I see it, but when I started reading his article, I did something I've never done before. I started reading it out loud because it felt like I wrote it. And then it was like 9:30 or 10 o'clock. I started emailing it to members of the Wirebuzz digital strategy team because I knew that the nerds in this office are so conscious about attention and how we hack it in order to bring a prospect whose attention is super valuable. You know, attention in the attention economy is not only valuable, but it's scarce. So the best marketers are the ones that are already taking that into consideration. So coming up in a few moments, you're going to hear an interview with the Harvard Business School professor. Super cool, very smart information that you can use. But going back to this UK Telegraph article, a team at Nottingham Trent University investigated the effects on mood as participants received thousands of digital alerts over a five-week period. Out of more than a half million notifications, which is a lot, and also the exact reason why I took off my Apple Watch, because I don't need somebody tapping me every couple of seconds to remind me to do something. Over a half million notifications, these researchers in the UK found that 32% resulted in negative emotions, triggering us inside to feel hostile, upset, nervous, afraid, or even ashamed. Quote, these digital alerts continuously disrupt our activities through instant calls for attention. It's basically grabbing the attention. You know what angers me? When digital interruptions break my already vulnerable attention span, because I have to work harder than most people to focus. And you know what else angers me? Marketers who fail to realize that the core of their job is to hack their prospects' attention, to pattern interrupt them, and to inspire them to make a buying decision. And you do that in most cases with video and the power of emotion, which you're going to hear about in this conversation coming up. Now, if you aren't familiar with the concept of the attention economy, it's based on the fact that consumer attention is limited and always comes at a price. And that price has been skyrocketing in recent years, and every single day there are more companies with more brands and more products to advertise, which means there's more demand for consumer attention than ever before. So to talk about the three principles to reclaim value in the attention economy, I'm joined right now by a Harvard Business School professor, Talas Teixeira. Hi, Talas.
Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. When I saw this article that you wrote out of Think with Google, I got super excited because this is exactly what we preach to our clients on a daily basis. And in your research, you found that traditional media has become seven times more expensive and is only 20% as effective as it used to be. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's two principles going on, right? So as you point out, it's become more expensive and less effective. So let's start with the less effective part. The reason it has become less effective is just because consumers are less interested in advertisements as a general principle. Now there are more ads, and consumers know that the reason they watch ads are twofold. One is to get information on new products, services, ideas, companies, so on and so forth. But now with search engines and with everything being practically online, I don't need to interrupt my TV viewing experience or radio listening experience to try to learn about new products and services. I can get that when I need it on the internet. And so that aspect of information has become less relevant. Ads as informative vehicles has become less relevant to consumers, so they just want to tune that out. So they try to avoid that. And as a consequence, as you pointed out, approximately today, less than 20, I'd say about 18% of the ads that are started, that are shown to people, they decide to watch it until the end. So ads are less effective because they are less informative to consumers. The other part is ads also function as entertainment devices. Well, now consumers have access to a lot of other types of entertainment, particularly the ones that they choose to watch, right?
Right.
And so also, again, ads as an entertainment device are not as effective anymore. Same reason consumers are tuning that out. So that's the reason why ads are becoming less effective. Now, why is the cost rising, right? It doesn't make sense. Something that becomes less useful to advertisers, why are they paying more and more for it? And the reason to explain that is basically simple supply and demand, just like in any economy. Think about any product. Think about tomatoes. Think about cars. They increase in price when the demand outstrips supply. And so in the case of consumer attention, basically today there are more companies, each company with more brands, each brand with more products launching, and all of this require more attention. And guess what? The supply of attention increases only as new people are born to this world. We can't increase dramatically our attention, so what we have is displacement, a lack of compatibility between supply just growing very, very little, and the demand for attention, which is advertisers wanting people's attention, has dramatically increased, and therefore what we see is the rise in the prices of attention in the market.
Okay, super cool. I would say even very nerdy that we're having this conversation, and that's what I like about it. So what I heard is there's less interest from consumers, but the ads are more expensive to advertisers because demand has outpaced supply. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Another way to say it is there's more competition for ever decreasing amounts of consumer attention.
Okay, that's super helpful. And then as we have more options and only so much attention, then the problem becomes even more complex.
That's right.
What are some of the biggest money-wasting media channels that advertisers are using today?
So among the most money-wasting channels that our advertisers are wasting are mass media. Some tend to argue that TV is outdated, people don't watch TV anymore, younger people aren't watching TV, they're skipping through ads, they're using DVRs. That happens. But from the advertiser's point of view, the fact is that any mass media, any media that attracts a lot of people, tends to attract a lot of very different people. People with very different interests, very different ages, very different backgrounds. And so spending so much money on getting such a broad audience and then trying to advertise a specific product is becoming a money-losing proposition. It's not just about TV. If you go to any environment, a media company, a channel, a place, where there's so many different people, it is very hard to get the attention of all these people. And so as a natural consequence, whatever product or service you are offering, chances are the majority of people are not interested in that and therefore are not going to pay attention. And when they don't pay attention, again, in mass, it leads to inefficiency.
Yeah.
It leads to this wastage.
Okay, so look, you and I are both children from an earlier form of media. Are we really just discovering that the traditional media that was the gold standard for a long time has always been inefficient? Or is this really because of the influx of so much supply out there that it's now being discovered that it's inefficient?
Ah, that's a great question. So has television, for example, or print or any other mass media, has it always been inefficient? And the answer is no, not quite. Let's start with, you know, post-war, the 40s and 50s. At that point in time, consumers had no other means to learn about new products and services. An electric can opener was something new, and the most easy way to learn about these new kitchen appliances, new cars, the new Mustang, was to watch a TV ad. So people would normally use television ads to learn about new products and services, learn about what's new, what's exciting, what's out there. And so they would pay attention. TV ads used to be useful to people because they had no other ways to learn about these things. The other way was kind of word of mouth, but that took time, wasn't that satisfying, wasn't that engaging. And so when we look at data in the 50s and 60s, the amount of ad avoidance was very low. Most people, 97% plus of the people would watch TV ads until the end. That kept coming down slowly with the 80s, the 90s, kept going, but it was still a high number. What happened, the dramatic fall in attention to television ads and other mass media ads, was when the internet came about, 1994, because it suddenly competed with as an information delivery for products and for brands. And so consumers say, oh, now I don't need to learn about new products through TV ads. Let me watch my show. That's the purpose of television. Right. I want to watch my show. Oh, if I want to learn about a new product or service, I go online, I Google, I search, I go to the website of the company. So that was a dramatic, what we call a tipping point in ads becoming less effective.
Okay. Yeah, that's super interesting to me. You know, okay, so this is what I heard here. Any mass media that attracts a lot of people isn't specific enough or targeted enough to be cost effective. And then it dawned on me that when my wife and I watch TV at night together as a husband and wife activity, whenever we get to the commercials and I go to fast forward through the commercials, she always says, Hey, I want to see that. How am I going to learn? And I look at it, like you said, as interruptive. So what I do is I just tell her, and I don't know if this is good for relationships, but this is good for time efficiency. I just tell her that I won't delete the show and she could go back and look at the commercials on her time. Right?
Basically, you're saying I want to prioritize my purpose for watching TV over
here. Yes. Spot on. So look, what are some of the challenges that keep marketers in marketing leaders from adopting more precise and measurable advertising channels?
Well, yes. So I think that's when the industry kind of came about and said, if you just gave the example of you and your wife watching television and in the ads, your wife wants to watch some ads and you don't, you know, imagine like at primetime television and some channels can still bring in 10 to 15 million viewers at the same night. Imagine if you had 15 million viewers, each one with the opportunity to skip an ad. Most people skip because it's impossible to get everybody to be interested in something. And so the alternative is more targeted ads. And online, with the availability of the data and consumer behavior and knowing real time who's watching, who is not, what are their history of searches online, targeting becomes much more effective. Now, there's a problem with that. So the benefit would be that you have less ad avoidance because now if you do your homework right, you can choose the people who are interested in the product category and try to send them a specific type of ad. There's a problem with that, which is that still most people are not interested in the ads, even for the products that they would be interested in, because, again, they know that at any point in time later, they can search for that product. So it still doesn't eliminate the fact that people are saying, I don't want you, the advertiser, to tell me what should I be paying attention to and when. I'll do that on an as-needed basis. The same way people are consuming video on demand when they need it, whenever they want it, they want to consume information on companies on demand. When I need it, I will Google, I will go to the website. So, you know, there's an improvement, but also it doesn't fully solve the problem of people not wanting to be exposed to sort of commercial content when they are not ready, they don't need it.
Right? Yeah. Look, that makes good sense. The beauty with targeted ads is you have less ad avoidance and higher relevancy to the end user. The higher the relevancy, the more the engagement or adoption or conversion is going to be. And that's an exciting trend for marketers that like to adapt and evolve. And it's a threat to those that are still selling traditional mainstream media as the solution. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I completely agree with that statement. The statement that basically sort of the way media companies work is in principle, any media company, if you think about it, works by getting naturally people to come and pay attention to them. So if you're the New York Times, you're ABC, you're an online blog, you're a video network, you're a YouTube video, people will naturally come to you for your content. And so now you're a media company. You didn't need to advertise to get them or as much. They will come to you because of whatever content they're attracted to. And the way media companies work and operate in an ad-based media system is basically by getting some of this attention and selling it, allocating a portion of it to advertisers and selling a portion of it. And advertisers, you know, the Fords and the Toyotas and the Boeings and the Starbucks of the world, they don't get naturally enough people to go to their websites every day. So they need to pay media companies to get all of this attention. And the challenge that we've been seeing is that media companies are getting less attention. Online, sort of, this attention is less valuable. And the attention that they're allocating to the advertisers to be sold is basically being wasted, in a sense that they sell the attention, but sort of consumers choose to pay attention at the end of the day, whatever they want or not. And so advertisers are spending more and more money to get less and less sustained attention.
Absolutely. I see that all the time. Let's talk about how to maximize attention then and provide some value to the listeners on solutions that they can implement. You know, when discussing the creative factors that help maximize attention, you put a lot of emphasis in your article, your Think with Google or Google Insights article, on storytelling, and not just stories in general, but stories that take customers on an emotional journey through even a series of highs and lows. We do the same thing here at Wirebuzz in our videos. We found them to be particularly valuable for driving sales, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on why stories are such a great attention hacking tool.
So one of the solutions in this new world in which consumers are dedicating less attention to ads, and the cost of advertising is becoming more expensive in certain channels, is, as you point out, try to retain attention. If you're going to buy such expensive attention, try to retain it better as an advertiser. And as you point out, I advocate one is through creative processes. And I've done research in other long format content, and I find that one of the most engaging forms of content is through storytelling. If you watch sort of the better Hollywood movies, if you watch TV shows, there's a lot of storytelling in the process, and stories are engaging. And one of the important underlying fundamentals of stories is they have something that we call a narrative arc. Mm-hmm. And there's this narrative arc. At the end of the day, there's many ways to execute it on it. But at the end of the day, the reason a narrative arc really glues people to the screen, to listen, to watch something, is because it takes consumers, viewers, on this emotional journey in which in the beginning they don't know what to expect. And over time, there's some form of emotionality that is delivered in the process of the story. If it's a comedy, it's delivered in a form of joy. If it's suspense, it's in the form of surprise, right? It can be in the form of terror, by fear, and many other forms. But what is common across these different types of stories is that there is what I call a roller coaster of emotions. Now, before I say that, what initially when I did this research, I thought the better ads are the ones who max out on any emotion. So the best ad that will get your attention is the one that's most funny throughout the ad. The best ad becomes most surprising throughout the ad. And what I've come to learn is that that's not the most effective approach. What is more effective is this roller coaster of emotion approach, in which you have highs and lows of the emotion. So you start off and you increasingly deliver joy, but in order to not let the viewer sort of be accustomed to it, you actually take it away in a portion of the ad. Mm-hmm. You just eliminate it. You consciously take it away, and then you bring it back. And then you take it away and bring it back. That's what I call the ups and downs. So you make them laugh, and then you stop. And then you make them laugh again on something else, and you stop. And again and stop, as opposed to this continuous process of something humorous.
You know, as you're talking, I realized that about 10 years ago, I was at a wedding. I used to run digital for 7 of the largest nationally syndicated talk shows in Hollywood, and 10% of the attendees at the wedding, there were only 80 people at the wedding, were major national talk show hosts. that were probably the greatest storytellers of a generation. And one after another got up and toasted the bride and groom, and in doing so, did exactly what comes natural to them, but what you just articulated beautifully, bringing the audience on that up and down, that laughter and that tear emotional roller coaster, to the point where you were sad when the toast ended, and I've never seen that at a wedding before.
That's a very interesting example. What I found fascinating when I did this research was, you know, I knew by looking at Hollywood and looking at other, you know, even in fiction storytelling and books, that you could create this roller coaster of emotion if you had an hour and a half in a movie or you had 300 pages in a book. I was skeptical that you could do it in 60 seconds or even 30 seconds. And after looking at the better ads, I found evidence that it is possible to take people on an emotional roller coaster even in 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. One of my favorite ads that I'll put on the show notes page for this episode was in a Super Bowl last year or the year before, and I believe it was a Ford commercial featuring Paul Harvey talking about I am a farmer, and he got you through that whole roller coaster. Look, you know, I know you mentioned in your research that you need to avoid displaying your logo too soon for too long, and we've been advising clients to avoid starting their videos with motion graphic animations or that display their logo or an intro bumper for years now, because the analytics on the back end, the viewing data, has always showed a huge drop off when people would start videos that way. And aside from avoiding too much branding and storytelling, have you found any other creative hacks for maximizing attention?
So other creative hacks that you say maximize attention, one actually has to do with how to place the brand within the ad.
Mm-hmm.
The first, my doctoral dissertation at the University of Michigan, I looked at optimal placement of logos and trademarks, pack shots, and TV ads. You know, the first insight, I actually had hundreds of people watching dozens of ads. So I had tens of thousands of data points. And as people watched these ads, I had them, their eyes recorded using an eye tracker, which tracks sure. people's eyes through infrared light. And the first thing that I learned was whenever the eye looks at a brand logo, guess what happens? People switch the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly more interesting was that people switched the channel even when they looked at logos of brands that they liked, like Apple. It wasn't just when they disliked the brand, even brands that they liked. And it happened even if they were exposed to the brand multiple times in the ad. For the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, when somebody already knows what the ad is about, they're more likely to skip the ad when the logo appears on the screen. So, you know, obviously the naive solution would be don't put any brand logo in your ads and you'll get more people to watch it until the end. But that's sort of, that defeats the purpose of advertising. So I created a system to optimize, algorithms to optimize the placement of the ads. And I let it run and I used that for many, many ads and many different brands and categories. And what the algorithm revealed to me is the optimal placement of brand logos in ads is actually not all in the beginning, not all in the end, but interspersed throughout the ad. So the idea is that you need to get people to feel comfortable with the brand logo on the screen. And the way you do that is by positioning it in the screen such that it is not intrusive, and you put it in, but you take it out very quickly. You don't put it for too long. You put it in, put it out, in, out, in, out, multiple times. This way you get people comfortable with the brand in the ad. And that minimizes the likelihood that people will actually switch the channel and want to stop watching.
All right. So I think what I just learned from you is if you position the ad in more of an organic, natural way, where it's there, but it's not forced, and it leaves, and then you reintroduce it later on, you're going to get much better results than plastering it at the front and at the beginning and creating more. So less of a traditional ad placement or logo placement and more of an organic, natural placement.
Absolutely. The idea is to not be intrusive.
Yep.
So putting the worst thing you can do with an ad is putting a blue Ford Oval logo in a white background in the middle of the screen.
Right.
If you do that, even the Ford lovers are going to skip your ad. So you got to avoid that. Be less intrusive. And this technique that I've developed, I've started calling it brand pulsing, because you should pulse the brand multiple times on the screen. In different parts, not too big, but more organically, as you say. So car ads actually do that very well. Most car ads are actually, there's one person gets inside a car and drives around town, and you see different scenery. When you think about it, the logo of the car is in the front of the car, in the back, in the tires, never like too long, prolonged period of time in one place. So the brand is appearing in and out organically, and so the brand is being pulsed on screen. People are more sort of naturally inclined to that than if you just plaster in the middle.
And you know what, Talas, maybe what we haven't discussed is how sophisticated the viewer is. We're all label conscious in our culture. Like, you know, that guy's got a cool pair of certain type of glasses. Oh, look at them. They're driving that new car. We're so label conscious that people are smart enough to figure out what the brand is in a few seconds as it goes by, and they really don't need it tattooed on the front of the screen.
Absolutely. I would go beyond. If you think about the average American spends about sort of has a TV on in their household for about 4 hours, almost 5 hours now. Almost 5 hours a day, the average American is watching TV, or at least the TV on. You know, if you or me, I watch TV rarely, so there must be somebody out there that is watching at least 8 hours of TV per day, just to make the average work. But, you know, in 1 hour, you have at least 16 minutes of ads, and so you have at least 32 ads. If you do the math, you'll come to the fact that the average American person is exposed to about 20 to 40,000 ads per year. 20 to 40,000 ads. This person has become a professional ad watcher, but more importantly, a professional ad avoider. Anything that you do that ticks them off, they will avoid you. It's in their business. They've done it thousands and thousands of times every year. And so you need to understand the fact that, as you point out, consumers have become kind of very experienced, and anything sort of inorganic, anything too much, they will avoid you, and you will have still paid for the advertising cost.
Absolutely. You would have lost that cost. Look, I've got a whole team full of nerds here. Maybe not as many nerds as you have on campus at the Harvard Business School, but we got a lot of nerds here. And we loved in the article that you wrote, when you said that you talked about the ladder of engagement and how you've got to incrementally work people up that ladder of engagement, like an engagement strategy. Can you share with our listeners what you mean by ladder of engagement?
Absolutely. So the idea is very simple, and let's start off with something that has nothing to do with advertising. How would you feel, Todd, if I met you for the first time and I just said, hey, Todd, let's grab a 2.5-hour dinner, you and me? You would most likely say, absolutely not. Yeah. I just met you. Why would I spend 2.5 hours talking to you? Even an hour lunch would be too much.
Right.
When we meet, the first thing, if we want to have a sort of another follow-up conversation, what do? Let's grab coffee. 10, 15 minutes of your time. Even if it's a boring conversation, well, you know, you cut your losses 10, 15 minutes. If we have coffee for 15 minutes and we enjoy the conversation, maybe we'll say, let's grab lunch, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. If that works well, we keep, you know, engaged, say, oh, you know, one day let's grab dinner, an hour and a half. And that is how people normally increase their engagement with each other. For brands and individuals, that is no different. no new brand can get my attention. And if they want me to watch a TV commercial, online ad, mobile, anything for a minute, that is too much. That is like asking people to have dinner with them for the first time. A new brand does not have this opportunity, no matter how much they spend, no matter how creative their ad is, no matter what they do. What new brands do have an opportunity to say is, hey, can I have 5 seconds of your time? Let me tell you something interesting. And if these five things, in these 5 seconds, this was interesting, the brand later on can come back and say, here's a 15-second video.
Right.
And then maybe, you know, spend 45 seconds on my website, and then over time increasing in what I call the ladder of engagement. You cannot assume that all new brands are going to be like Apple. Apple has created a long-term relationship with people. Apple can afford to put a 60-second Super Bowl ad or even more. Everybody else has to start from the first step, and the first step is very, very few seconds of people's attention.
Right. It's the bottom rung on that ladder of attention, and the people that jump right to the let's go have dinner, or the people that go in for the hard, quick close, are the ones that turn people off. You know, the goal of each piece of content is to continue the conversation and to move and advance the prospect one step closer to the sale. First, you got to earn that attention by bringing them to interest. And once they're interested, the goal then has to be to build value and desire. And once the desire is strong, push them to take action. You're cool with all of that, aren't you?
Absolutely. And going back to your first question, why are so many companies, so many brands wasting money through advertising? Because they spend a lot of money buying this from media companies, and they think they have a reason to talk to consumers and ask them out to dinner for the first time.
Right. Okay, you know, I also know that one of the ways we get around the, or we optimize the storytelling process, whenever we're creating videos for people and we want to create that arc of emotion, we make sure that we tell stories that doesn't have the story being, isn't the person on camera talking to and looking into the lens as the only thing you're going to see in that video. And as soon as we could cut away and show the supportive storyline of the person actually going in and meeting with a patient and advising and holding their hand and then meeting with the family outside the room, that people follow stories and connect with the emotions to it a lot deeper, a lot richer, more memorable than just putting somebody on camera and putting them up against a wall and having them tell the story. Same principles, right?
I couldn't have said better. I think, Todd, you should become a Harvard Business School professor, because that summary that sums up pretty well.
Well, I will send in my resume. And look, this has been a really fun conversation. I'm grateful that you sent me in the research to look at. I know my team had a lot of fun, and I'm grateful you did that. Anything that, and I'll take a little cut right here, but as a thank you for you and your time, is there anything that I could promote besides that article that would be of value to you?
Well, Todd, I run a website in which I provide these tips, and I provide some of my most recent research and articles. My website is www.economicsofattention.com. So anybody interested can get articles, talk to me, ask questions, see some of the videos. But I appreciate being on your podcast and getting the opportunity to talk to your own audiences. And I hope they are as engaged as I am in talking to you.
Well, the honor is ours. You think in line with where we're seeing. This is all a battle for the attention economy. And the marketers that are going to win at the end of the day are going to be the ones that understand how to hack attention and pull people economically, very strategically through a buyer's journey. For more information on Professor Talis Tejera, go to economicsofattention.com. That's one word, economics of attention. If you want to get access to the show notes for this episode, wirebuzz.com/125. I'll also make sure that that article from the UK Telegraph about the digital interruptions that you get access to at wirebuzz.com/125. And Professor, thank you so much for joining us on Video Marketing Mastery.
It was a pleasure, Todd.
Okay, super cool. I'm super jacked to have brought you that conversation. Like my adrenaline is rushing right now. And I think the reason is this Wirebuzz podcast ultimately started off as video marketing, right? But I've never really saw myself as a video marketer. I'm a digital marketer who's decided to use video as my primary tool because it gets the best results, right? So I'm a freak for search, and I could have had the same conversation with Eric Enge, search marketer of the year. Oh yes, I brought that interview to you. And I could have had this conversation with Mark Traphagen, who for on the Clout Score is like the number one content marketing guru, a dear friend, and I've had this type of a conversation. But I think what you're starting to see is that all of us are migrating towards where our audience is already headed. It doesn't matter if we're talking about search, you're still going to hear from the rock stars of search on this podcast, or content, or email, or traffic, or sales. And like you just saw here, advertising and content and how we use it to optimize in the attention economy. Super cool. As we proceed ahead, you're going to be hearing from other rock stars that are going to paint the picture, because you can't just be a video guy and expect to get the results that that leading marketers get. And to add one other layer on top of this, leading marketers are the ones that are out there way ahead of the curve. Look, if you've been watching Gary Vee's career, and you know, I started really early, maybe I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, when Gary Vee was reviewing wine each day and barely old enough to be drinking wine, for crying out loud. And the guy was doing a daily wine review show where I think he was reviewing like 4 bottles of wine a day on YouTube. And eventually it went to Vidler, and all of his successes have been about early adoption, right? Early adoption, the early bird gets the worm, and marketers don't recognize that. And the opportunities to be the early adopter is really obvious in stock. Early adopters are the ones that have the largest percentage growth. In marketing, same exact thing. But marketers are often too cool to show up and be the early adopter, and that's a marketer that's a follower. A marketer that's a leader is the one that early adopts, that's comfortable doing that, that gets to the location, owns the location. So when the traffic rolls in, they already are the big boss of that space before anybody else. Most marketers think they're the coolest people in the room, right? Because we all understand the marketing buzz and how marketers should be dressed and the kind of like dry wax you put in your hair to look cool. Like, marketers get the cool vibe. But what marketers get wrong time and again, and I hear it when I'm speaking and I'm in front of an audience, one of the first one or two questions that's asked of me is always, "Hey Todd, what social network should we be on?" That right there is an indicator of a follower. A leader is not going to be the one that has to show up at the bar by the time the bar is bumping, and then they walk in and do a brief cameo. A leader in marketing recognizes trends, arrives at that bar early, meets the bartender, the bouncer, the GM, the waitresses, finds the right booth, claims territory. So when people walk into that bar, they're already the center of attention, right? That is the art of marketing. And in the attention economy, you have to recognize how you own the conversation in your space, in your business niche, and don't make that conversation all about you, but be of value in the center of that space. This was a fabulous interview. Remember, economicsofattention.com is the place to go. And if you need to guarantee that your videos generate ROI. And for those of you who are traditional video people, that's return on investment, right? If your job is dependent on generating ROI, if the success of your business is relying on you to turn viewers into paying customers, well, Wirebuzz created a 5-part workshop. It's a video-based workshop. Go figure, right? Because we know video gets the best results. And we've made that available for free to the listeners of this podcast. And you could get access to this essential listening and essential viewing material on marketing at wirebuzz.com/ROI, like return on investment, right? Get it, get access to it. Yours truly will teach you through each of the steps. And before you know it, you can tie revenue generation and the cost and expense to your campaigns to prove out if things work, right? When they work, apply more gas. Wirebuzz.com/ROI. And if this podcast was valuable to you, and Lord knows it was, go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, hit the subscribe button and hit hard. And what you will get is each and every episode will be sent directly to your mobile device. Now, why does the video guy have a podcast, right? It sounds like the priest going to the temple, doesn't it? But the reality is I know my goals. My goals are to educate you, to be able to guide you through the process. And I know that there in the video world, there is a gap of where I can influence and help guide you through the process. That gap is when you're in your car, when you're at the gym, when you're on an airplane, right? When you're waiting for your doctor to come call you for your doctor's appointment. All of those places are areas where video might not be the best use, but a podcast is. And as a former radio guy with pipes like this, I've got to get in front of a microphone and tap into that time that you have from when you leave your house to you drive to the office. So let this be part of your essential listening. And if you've got a friend that you're rooting for that needs to know in the digital space how to amplify results, well, please make sure you forward this podcast directly to them. And each and every week, I'll bring you 2 episodes speaking to the smartest minds in digital marketing. All right, that's all I got for you. Rate and review at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Send this off to a friend. And if you've got a tip or a topic or somebody you want me to interview, go to wirebuzz.com/pitch with a P. All right, with a P, not with a B, and it'll get sent directly to me. Peace out, all right? Have a great week. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, and you're not going to want to miss the next episode because I have pulled together some amazing digital marketing news, and I'm going to tie up for you what your business lesson is for each and every one of those stories so you can take away what Uber's doing or what Lyft is doing and see if you can apply that same tactic to your business, right? That's what we're going to do together in the next episode, and you'll get that right here at Video Marketing Mastery. Peace.